welcome to episode 68 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today I'm talking to Miguel Centellas, who is Croft Instructional Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at the University of Mississippi. He does research on Bolivian politics, electoral politics, measuring democracy, I'm sure other things as well. So, Miguel, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You were on the podcast, I was looking back, in December 2016, so now almost 3 years ago.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And at that point, Evo Morales had just decided to run despite the failed referendum. So we were sort of talking about, I think we were actually talking about more electoral stuff, but not crisis stuff. So now we're 3 years later at more of a crisis point.
Yes.
So just to for anybody who's listening who maybe hasn't been following it closely, just give a quick rundown on why Evo Morales' declaration of victory in the presidential election is so controversial.
Sure. So, you know, if you skip aside the whole referendum issue, which we should get back to at some point.
Yeah, that just complicates it even more, but yes.
Yeah. So there was a count. So the electoral court in Bolivia, as in many other countries in Latin America, they have an independent sort of watchdog organization. In Bolivia, it's actually the fourth branch of government. And so it's supposed to count the votes. And there's a pretty strict system there to make it transparent, but also a legitimate vote count. So they have the official count, but they also have this quick count that they do the night of the election. And the quick count is not official, but it's generally been regarded as close to accurate and a good indicator. And so that was being updated on their website periodically shortly after polls closed. And it showed a marked tendency in favor of Carlos Mesa. But of course, most of these were urban votes that were coming in. And little by little, that was sort of chipping away. And you could see that it was clearly headed towards a runoff. And sometime at night, a couple hours before midnight, the system went down for several hours. And the rationale that it was given at first was that the system had to go down because the official count was about to start. And you can't have two counts going simultaneously. That was their explanation. Uh-huh. And then when the system came back up, suddenly it looked like the counts had advanced significantly and the margin had completely switched in favor of Evo Morales. And it looked headed... it looked to be headed towards a sheer victory with no runoff. And people got really suspicious. Many people began throwing accusations of fraud. And there's various people who tried to demonstrate it, you know, with because you can download the actual Excel spreadsheets of the counts in real time uh-huh. from the electoral court and began finding some errors in that. And so in the midst of all of this, Evo Morales announced that he clearly had won. He didn't need to go to a runoff, but the official count hadn't yet finished. There had not been an official pronouncement from the electoral court, and there were accusations of fraud that were fairly credible already beginning to surface.
Yeah, and just from the outside, I certainly wasn't looking at Excel sheets, but that, you know, he needed to get a margin of 10% over the second place finisher in order to avoid the runoff. And when everything went down, then Evo Morales says, oh, well, don't worry, they still have to count the rural areas. And when they count the rural areas, then that's going to put me over. And then lo and behold, you know, it comes back and he's like just over the 10%. So sort of an Occam's razor explanation is like just something happened there.
Correct. I think he's over officially by about 500 votes. It's pretty small margin. It's, you know, a decimal point, just enough to be over the 10%. And so the rural vote, the issue with the rural vote in Bolivia is historically it has favored Mas. But Bolivia is about 70-75% urban at this point.
Yeah.
And so every time there's an election, the rural vote is diminished in sheer quantity. Uh-huh. The other issue that came out was Bolivians were voting abroad. Overseas in 20, maybe 30 some countries. And there began to surface a number of accusations of fraud there. You know, there is one very interesting viral video of a young boy, young man, I should say, in Italy, who happened to also have been called to be a jurado, which is kind of randomly you assign people from a precinct to also oversee the balloting, which is a measure of transparency. And while he was there, he was talking to a reporter and mentioned that when he went to vote, his ballot was already marked, and it was marked for Mas. And so when he went to return it, they say, well, we can't, you know, give you another ballot because they're exactly counted to have the exact number of people that we have here in this precinct, which I don't think is true. And so his vote was simply annulled. And so there's a lot of questions because the international vote was very heavily in favor of Mas, somewhere in the 70-80% range, varies by country. And in many of these cases, you know, the only people voting are a handful of expats living abroad. And of course, it's run by embassy staff.
Right, and that actually was interesting. On Twitter, someone had pointed out to me that when you were looking at the results on the TSE website, is that you had to click down to go from Bolivia to Mundo,
Correct.
and then when you switched to Mundo, suddenly Evo Morales's lead jumped over the 10%.
Yes. So if it wasn't for the international vote, there'd be a runoff right now.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting research question right there, probably. And this is a tough question, but
Sure.
what are the chances he truly won enough votes that 10% is a real thing?
Yeah. The problem is the chances are pretty good, to be honest. I mean, I know a
Okay.
lot of folks don't want to hear that, but he'd been polling somewhere in the mid 30%, as high as mid 40% throughout the last few months, you know, depending on which polls you're looking at. And in many of the polls, he was over 10% over Mesa. In some of those polls, of course, they were both below the 40%. So it's really tricky. You have to, you can avoid a runoff if you are beating your second place opponent by 10%, but also have to be above 40% yourself. So if it's 36, 24, it's still a runoff. But in many of the polls, he had, you know, pretty close, if not more than a 10% edge over Mesa. And in many of those polls, he was pretty close to mid 40%. The polls in Bolivia do tend to underemphasize Mas's strength. So there's a long record of polls sort of showing him getting 50% or so, and then he gets 65% of the vote. Now, the big question in hindsight, of course, is going to be if there was fraud in this election, was there fraud in previous elections that make up for the difference between electoral results versus polling results? Because the polls have gotten very good. In the 90s, early 2000s, they tended to mainly poll the big cities. But increasingly, these polling organizations have better funding and they have samples that include people in the deep countryside, you know, using stratified cluster sampling. You get a pretty good representative sample of the country. Of course, one issue that doesn't often get talked about internationally, and it's a very kind of culturally sensitive issue, is that a number of rural communities have a long tradition of voting 100% in favor of whatever candidate the community decides to back. And in the last few years, it's been Mas. And so it could be that you poll people in those communities, and when you speak to them face to face, they may not individually prefer Mas. But there is strong control in these small rural communities, and there's, of course, lots of these rural communities, where the voters are essentially, you know, controlled by community leaders. And, you know, some folks argue that this is part of an Andean Ayllu tradition of consensus politics, that they do sit around for a day or two and discuss who they want to support, and then they all commit to voting for whoever the community decides. But of course, it means that you have these rare ballots where if you go through the Excel spreadsheets and you can look at community by community, just rows and rows of rural areas, it's 100% Mas vote. You know, so.
So just underlying the fact that given conditions like that it's entirely possible that this is a legitimate win.
It is entirely possible, and I think that's an important thing for everyone to recognize. The problem now is folks are also saying, well, why should he have even been allowed to run?
Right, because in fact he lost a referendum 3 years ago on that issue and managed to do it anyway.
Correct. And even the electoral court ruled against him. And you know, I know there's a lot of folks who don't trust the electoral court, and currently there's very good reason for that. Even I'm starting to get a little nervous about them. But for the most part, they've historically been very good, and they did say you can't run. But then the Constitutional Court ruled that he could, and that superseded the electoral court's decision.
So now he is proclaimed president. I was just looking at the news, and I guess there's an offer of an audit, whatever exactly that is going to mean. But for right now, he's the still the president, will be the president again. Is there any sense that he will address the half of the country that didn't want him in office?
It's increasingly unlikely. And last night, he, you know, gave a speech, or yesterday afternoon at some point, and it's been circulating, where he essentially instructed his supporters to besiege the cities, you know, hacer un cerco. And they're going to cut off the water. He's threatened. They want to prevent them from receiving food. And he literally said, "Vamos a ver cuánto van a aguantar." So, the implicit thing there is, you know, they can protest all they want. We're going to starve them out. We're going to cut off their water. And let's see how long they can hold out before they just cave in. That doesn't seem like he's offering any kind of olive branch to the opposition. And of course, the opposition does stupid things too, right? Mesa, you know, made his own speech saying that he was not going to accept a second round. He wanted to be made president. But there's no indication that he came anywhere close to receiving the number of votes that would have made him president. And I don't think he would have won a second round, to be honest.
Okay, so that's actually an interesting question because I didn't know how much the opposition would rally around him. How much legitimacy does he himself have? Because he's obviously a former president and firmly establishment of whether he would have won a second round likely.
Yeah, I don't think he would have. I mean, that's my personal thing. I attended a meeting a while ago, put together by the UN, you know, kind of anticipating a crisis. And the consensus there seemed to be the same, that, you know, it would probably go to runoff, but that Mesa probably wouldn't win. And mainly because the opposition is very divided. I mean, the opposition seems to always find a way to destroy any chances they have, right? They snatch, you know, defeat out of the jaws of victory time and time and time again. They've had 13 years and they have not built a political party. So every time there's been an election, facing Evo Morales has always been some, you know, kind of big figure that the opposition tends to rally around. Voters are actually really smart in Bolivia and they kind of solve the coordination problem. But there's always this new political vehicle, right? Podemos or CNN or something like that. And within, you know, 3, 4 years, that coalition falls apart. They put together a new name with a new party organization, and they start again. And whatever group they have doesn't run in the subsequent municipal and regional elections. So they're not building a party apparatus that can have a coherent platform or a coherent set of policies, or even just, you know, a team, right? As we think about it in politics, of senators and congressional deputies who gain experience and, you know, move through the ranks together. It's just kind of a hodgepodge every 4 years, every 4 or 5 years when they hold elections. And this is the same case again. Mesa decided to run, and the one figure that has sort of been building a opposition party has been this guy Samuel Doria Medina. And he's run in the past and always comes in third. He's not particularly popular, but every time he runs under the same party label. His party then runs in municipal elections, and they have candidates that do very well. The mayor of El Alto is a member of his party. And so he stole, if you will, El Alto from Evo Morales, right? El Alto is now, right now, marching into La Paz in support of the anti-Evo protests. It's an amazing phenomenon that El Alto is now part of the opposition. And, you know, he sidestepped. He said, "I'm not going to run. You know, if you guys chose Mesa, go for it." And I thought that was a huge mistake. I've told a lot of my acquaintances, I said, if you really wanted to run against Evo Morales, they should have nominated the mayor of El Alto, who's an indigenous woman from this political party who has a fairly decent track record, rather than, a figure, a non-political figure of the ancient establishment,
Right. So, and I was going to ask you about the opposition. Is this a kind of a Venezuela situation, where, the opposition just has never, over many, many years in Venezuela, ever been able to find a candidate who could win elections against Hugo Chavez, who could really rally people for any length of time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, they do have figures that can rally sections, right? So the one maybe key difference is that Bolivia has actually moved more towards federalism, whereas Venezuela has kind of lost some of its federalism, with more centralization in the past. And so many of the opposition parties, if you will, are really micro parties. They're municipal level, they're regional level. And Evo has, in the last, 5, 6, 10 years, essentially made alliances with them. You guys stay out of national politics, and I'll let you maintain your autonomy at the departmental or municipal level. So there are important figures in Santa Cruz, and there are figures in Tarija, and there's the mayor of La Paz and the mayor of El Alto, but they don't coordinate together, right? They're not members of the same party, so they don't sit together in the legislature. It's completely disjointed. And so voters do rally. I mean, it's amazing how voters rallied around Carlos Mesa, despite the fact that most of the folks I know who voted for him didn't like him.
Okay.
On an individual level, it was just the best chance. They saw it as the best chance to beat Evo Morales.
So Bolivia's always been polarized. Do you see this current situation as evidence of more polarization or just a different manifestation of the same polarization?
So it's a mixed bag, right? On the one hand, Bolivia right now is clearly polarized, right? The groups that are hardcore supporters of Evo Morales are beginning to try to march into the cities. Santa Cruz has been essentially under siege for the last 6 days or so. So people are manning barricades, trying to keep people in, and folks have been trying to march in, 100 or so at a time, and then people from different neighborhoods and Plan 3000 and, et cetera. I'm not going to go through all the neighborhoods that people don't know. Have been fighting them off. I mean, there have been, at least last report is something about 30 potential injuries in the last few days in Santa Cruz. So
Okay.
that's deep polarization. But on the other hand, the fact that people in El Alto and La Paz and Santa Cruz are essentially marching together, people in Potosí, it's this weird sense where all these disparate factions that have different reasons for disliking the current government are now doing one thing together, which is essentially demanding that he step down as president.
And so that part is different, you would say.
I think so. I think at this point, if you listen to a lot of the chants from people marching in La Paz, in Potosí, no one is asking for a second round anymore.
Okay.
They're asking for him to step down, and they're asking for new elections. They're also not wanting Mesa to be president necessarily, right? They really just want all of them gone. For the most part, they'll settle for new elections if Evo is not on the ballot. That's the sense, from the things they're chanting. They're not chanting, queremos Mesa or anything like that. They're just literally just saying, que se vaya,
Which is not going to happen, right? I mean, how likely would that, given his core of support?
Yeah. I mean, his core support is pretty strong and willing to use violence, but the wild card here is going to be the military and the police.
As always in Latin America.
Of course, right? So the moment they break, I mean, that was the thing with Goni, right? In 2003, it was the moment the military essentially said, we're not going to shoot people, and walked out of the way and left the police holding the bag. And the police said, well, then we're going to not do it either. Then it was over. Goni left the country.
Now switching back to kind of the electoral angle, so let's say Evo Morales is president. What is the outlook in the legislature, and how do you think it will play out? Is that how relevant is that?
Yeah, so that is partially the most distressing thing if you're a member of the opposition, right? So the thing was, if the best case scenario for the opposition was if Evo was forced into a runoff, but got the fewest possible votes, right? Because it's a proportional representation system. And so having gotten 40 plus percent of the vote in a legislature that is highly, tilted towards rural representation, he actually looks like he's going to come away right now with a majority in both chambers.
Ah.
Right. So at the same time, even if he left and Mesa, by some miracle became president, he would face an opposition-dominated legislature. Right. So a MAS-dominated legislature.
Right.
And so he got the big wild card that took place was there is this little party called PDC, the Christian Democratic Party. And they had nominated another one of these old figures from the past, Jaime Paz Zamora, who'd been a president in 1989. And he, resigned. He stepped aside to kind of give Mesa a better chance. And some, kind of branch of the party nominated on its own, replaced him on the ballot with this Korean Bolivian evangelical minister that no one really knew much about and threw him on the ballot. And that guy got almost 10% of the vote. He came in third place. And that was enough to essentially guarantee a number of Senate seats for Mas because of how the Senate breakdown worked out. Otherwise, the Senate, at the very least, would have been split or possibly tilted towards the opposition.
Interesting. So that's it's interesting too, because if you think of that, if for some reason Evo Morales were gone, Evo Morales doesn't disappear, right? He's still the leader of the party, and so that would give him a pretty substantial or substantially powerful position anyhow.
Right. Assuming the party survives him. I mean that I think has been the problem for when you talk to people from MAS, that's the reason why they support Evo's continued candidacy is when you really press them on the issue, they tell you he's the only one that can keep the party together. So if he were to resign and nominate any other member of the party, that person would come from some specific faction and the whole party could crumble and collapse.
Okay, that now I was gonna I thought about the question of a successor, because the eternal problem in Latin America are people who decide that they are indispensable and therefore don't leave office. So is there actually more support than I would assume, because there's no other person who acts as an umbrella over the MAS?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. So Evo is, what some sociologists would call the empty signifier, right? He kind of stands in for everything. He's a cocalero, but he's sort of not. He's sort of above that, if you will. But the big thing has been he has centralized power even before he was president, within the cocalero movement around himself. So there are strict rules within his union and within his party that restrict the ability of individuals to hold any one office more than one term consecutive. But there's always been an exception made for him. So over time, what ends up happening is there are all these factions that are allowed to operate independently, right? They're allowed to carve out little fiefdoms for themselves within the bureaucracy or within, regional or local level political offices. And they can shut out competitors from other regions or from other sectors. But all of that depends on the good graces of Evo Morales. So it's not that he's indispensable, it's that he's made himself indispensable. And so if he were to step aside, that would collapse. And if he were to groom a successor, then it's this weird situation where, to make another successor who is above the fray would require that that successor be powerful enough to displace Evo Morales. It's kind of a Sith. I mean, I hate to make it sound, it's like a Sith Lord type of thing, right? You can't train Darth Vader without realizing that Darth Vader is going to eventually kill you.
Well, and leaders are notoriously unwilling to groom such people.
Right.
There was no Hugo Chavez light ready to move in to Hugo Chavez. You ended up with Maduro,
Correct.
because he was malleable.
Yeah, and it's a shame because there are plenty of really good people in the MAS party and in the MAS bureaucracy, folks who were trying and have been trying to build a modern party apparatus. People have floated David Choquehuanca's a name, former foreign minister, as a person of a serious person who could have been a contender for the presidency, some former senators, etc. But what ends up happening is there's no step up, and so you see this sort of long list of former MAS leaders leave the party, right, and run for office independently with a different group. So like the governor of La Paz right now, Felix Pazzi, used to be one of the top five members of MAS when the party first emerged, and it just could never climb higher because there's nowhere up to go.
Right.
And one could easily imagine that someone like that probably had presidential or some other kind of aspirations. And if Evo Morales had said, "Well, I'm out in 2 terms anyways, let's let the party decide," Felix Pazzi probably would have been one of these contenders.
So, given all these things, does the current crisis change how we should classify Bolivia in terms of democracy? I mean, how much has it suffered in that regard?
So VDEM, Varieties for Democracy, and some of the other indicators have been showing Bolivia slipping for a while. I think this probably puts it across a threshold, depending on how everything finishes up, as probably a competitive authoritarianism rather
Okay.
than democracy with adjectives kind of alternative. I think if you are unwilling to respect the results of elections, you've probably crossed that threshold. But I think it's very similar in reverse to the Mexican example of 2000, right? In 2000, Mexico, the PAN, the opposition, won, and so you realize, okay, the PRI was willing to step aside, so maybe they would have done it the previous election. I think in this case, you can do the same thing in reverse, and that is Evo Morales is clearly not willing to step aside. And let's go back to the point when he decided to violate the referendum. Maybe that's the point when we say Bolivia crossed the line, right? And that's why I think a lot of people are skeptical of everything, right? Because a person who's willing to do anything to stay on the ballot, you can't imagine that person not doing anything to avoid a runoff.
Right, and at this point, it's hard to imagine him ever not running.
Correct.
I mean, figuring out some way to continue running, especially if you're given the dynamics of his concern and others' concern that if even if he chose not to run, that the MAS would fall apart.
Right.
All right. Well, with that uplifting note, we're out of time. I've been talking to Miguel Centellas, who's Croft Instructional Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at the University of Mississippi. So, Miguel, as always, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Pleasure to be here.